Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking the warmer weather and what does that mean as we move into fall. We'll talk about the Old Farmer's Almanac, see what they're saying for this winter. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at Nutrien's Hub for financial tools. Egg History Minute, we'll talk about the history of the Old Farmer's Almanac. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Disappointing, but not disappointing football weekend. It's a tie, so it's technically not a loss, but at the same time, it's not a win. And there was such hype, I think, of going into to Dallas. And the Packers have still not lost in, 6 years now or something at Dallas.
They've never lost at Jerry Dome. So.
Or at the Jerry World, yeah.
So it still felt weird. It's a night game, so he's probably stayed up late, kind of.
Well, it went into overtime, even.
So you obviously wanted to. I wanted to see what would happen. And then at the end, too, it felt like the Packers were just good with the tie. Like, hey, we're fine.
Yeah.
Let's not screw this up. And they almost did.
Almost looking back now, I feel like everything that they talked about after the game, like this Micah thing, almost kind of was a distraction.
Yeah.
It was almost like that's all they talked about. It wasn't like, how are we going to beat Dallas? Dallas looked like crap against the Bears, like total garbage.
Yeah.
And then Dak's like MVP caliber. Like, they had two offensive linemen down. CD Lamb was down.
Right. That was without CD Lamb.
And you got the Kirk Cousins disease, primetime Dak.
Right. Yeah. You let him score 40. Like, that, I don't know. It was almost like I felt like there was a distraction. Like, looking back, it was a distraction.
Yeah. Well, and special teams screwed us again. And so early, like, you didn't think it would matter, but it came down to that.
All things equal, that was a difference in the game.
Right.
Because there was a 3-point swing. You kick the field goal, you kick that extra point. You put 1 point on the board, and you take 2 points off what they scored.
Right.
We win by three. Like, again, that's a lot of things can, it's a butterfly effect, right? Everything, a lot of things can happen after that, but all things equal, you win that game if you make that extra point.
And it may, in some ways, made Dallas's game plan easier because they always had to score a touchdown. They were always down by four.
Right.
So it was a touchdown no matter what.
Right.
There was never them thinking about kicking.
With how good their kicker is,
right.
They can kick from.
Yeah, they made no qualms about talking about how good Dallas's kicker is. Yeah. Like, oh, they're almost in field goal range already.
Yeah. Matt, Bill and I don't have a sister. You have a sister, so you may know. But there's the famous saying of what a tie is like.
Yeah, I've never kissed my sister.
No. We have not kissed our sister either. So we don't know.
Just your brothers?
Yeah.
I have to admit, I got pissed off midway through the fourth quarter, and I went to bed.
You didn't even...
Didn't watch the end?
I didn't even watch the end. It was like fourth and two with about, I don't know, 6-8 minutes left, maybe a little longer, and Dallas converted the fourth and two. Like, it was a crosser over the middle, and they got like 9. I'm like, ugh. So I just went to bed. I got up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and I looked. I was like, I had to like go to two different websites or on my phone. I'm like,
make sure.
Seriously, we tied? Like, seriously? So,
well, and you're fighting for scoring at the whole second half, but up until about the last 3 minutes of the first half, it was a completely different game. Even with the screw up, like Dallas's only points was the two, and then all of a sudden, they score 2 touchdowns before halftime, and they're leading. And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
It's like our defense just collapsed and then couldn't get back.
I noticed just, like, I think, like, there was terrible tackling. There wasn't,
oh, yeah.
Like, the game, like the first two games, and even even the third game was good. That was the same thing at the end of the Browns game. They kind of just, but there wasn't the swarming to the ball. There wasn't gang tackling. It was that whole let them run 5 yards and then tackle them. You know, it wasn't the same. And that's what I mean. Like, it's almost felt like that was with a distraction. Like, everyone was so worried about what Micah was going to do in Dallas, and we forgot how to tackle.
Even if they would swarm, like, nobody could tackle. Like, they wouldn't follow through, and then the guy would bust out of, like, a group of four defenders and run for an extra 5 yards. It's like, what happened?
It's crazy that actually, in an NFL game where that's all you focus on all week, like, how can that change so much from week to week?
Right. Tackling is tackling.
It's got to be focus.
Yeah. Tackling's tackling.
Yeah.
Soybeans are starting to roll out there.
A lot of combines in the last 2 days.
Yeah, a lot of dust flying, too. It's a little dry.
Beans, though, aren't getting... Remember last year how they were drier than we thought?
Oh, like, yeah.
They had leaves on yet.
Like, too dry. Yeah.
Right, they were too dry. And this year I've seen more combines start in a field and have to switch to a different... You just stop, pull out, and go to a different field. So it does seem like they're in general ready, but it wasn't as, it's not like where they're getting away from us or anything like that.
Yeah, we're not combining 11% beans.
Right.
Like last year. So that's been a good thing.
It feels early for beans.
It's October.
I know it is, but it just feels early.
September went oddly quick. This, like, certain months seem to fly by, but holy man, this year for some, maybe it's because we thought silage would be ready, like, the 12th of September,
right.
And it really didn't get started till like the 18th or 20th. Like, it just
and even then,
chopping
it hasn't
season
really...
was kind of longer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not done. There's still guys out there chopping.
Right.
So,
right.
And I wouldn't have pegged that we would be.
No.
I mean, other than a few guys that plant later anyway, like your after first crops and some of that stuff, like. That maybe would be on the later side, but yeah, not. There are farms that are started this last week that I thought would have been done already.
Yeah, and with the heat, I thought it would have dropped out the moisture really quick. You know that we've had all this heat, and we're doing a plot yesterday, and we did see certain varieties. There was one variety; it was a 101 day that I had taken to try to see when the plot would be ready. I took it last week, and when we harvested yesterday, it dropped like. Probably 10 points in moisture, whereas the other variety that I had taken that way kind of held and was fine yet. So it was odd this year which ones are
holding moisture.
Are holding and which ones are all of a sudden are just like really dropping fairly quickly. Yeah. It seemed like I also would say this year's corn size, we've never had kernels this close to black layer.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're maybe a good way to say it is like 3/4 milk line. If you imagine kernels too, like they're wider at the top and kind of thinner and narrower at the bottom. So like if you did it by kernel, like by kernel design, half milk line, we always go like halfway down.
Sure.
That's half. Well, the top half is technically more by mass. So
right.
You get like some of these are like 3/4 milk line and you squeeze it. There's like
no
milk in there hardly at all.
Yeah.
And yet it still come back at 65% moisture, which is ideal. So,
but it does feel like the stalks are holding.
Yes.
Like you walk the fields.
Definitely holding.
You walk the fields, you take your sample, and like the whole plant, the whole, like the leaves are dry, the cobs look dry, and then you feel the stalk, and it's like, whoa, there's a lot of moisture there yet.
Yeah, I took last week, and then early this week was cutting some stalks, like basically cutting it below the ear, cutting it off, and then taking the knife and going like straight down the middle and then cutting off at the base. And it was crazy how, I mean, it's still like a wet sponge by the cob, but at the base, it was like a saturated sponge.
Oh, wow.
Like it was just like oozing out.
Almost like the moisture was trapped in the base of the plant.
Right. That cold week in September did something. I don't know what or why. And if it's, because of the rain we got as well, like it triggers, because we were dry ahead of that. I do know these varieties today, when they're under stress, they seem to like shut down. They like just shut off. Like if they're in drought stress or under some sort of stress, they just don't mature. They just hold, wait for better weather. And if that's what this trigger was, but it did something weird. Something happened.
Yeah.
Maybe a future episode that we got to talk about, but
it seemed to freeze time. Like,
right.
It didn't progress maturity in those couple weeks and
turn back.
It kind of pushed us. Yes. It's the share corn.
If I could turn back time. Keep going, man. We're waiting.
That's all I got. I don't have that song memorized. Sorry. I just picture the aircraft carrier.
Was in this music video?
That's where she sang the song was on, like, yeah. Because they made fun of it on Family Guy.
Okay.
They did a parody of it. But, yeah, and also... We'll see how long it lasts, but don't call your local governmental officials because nobody's home. As of midnight on Tuesday or 12:01 Wednesday, whatever you want to call it, the government did shut down. So there is nobody home.
But my mail is coming.
Yeah, mail doesn't stop. Mail doesn't stop. Social Security checks still go out. Like, there's certain things that don't stop, but...
The important stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah. We'll see how long it lasts this time around. But, anyway, our topic for this week. So, we're going to talk about the rest of the year.
See ya.
So, we had that cold spot that we were just talking about. But since then, it's been significantly warmer. It's the second summer, I guess you could say, for the year. We had a couple-week fall, and now we're back to summer. So it's kind of one of those things where last year we were really dry through really August until end of October. This year we had some moisture in September, but it was dry before that. It's dry again now. We haven't had rain for a little bit, and there's really not much rain in the forecast, I think. Saw a shower next week, possibly, with some weather change coming. So
it's been really clear. Like, last couple of days have been really clear, too.
Yeah, like last fall, we have a lot of sunny days where if beans were a lot more red, like, we're not getting the overcast or the bad weather where, you know, I wish I had a day to do beans here. Like, we're getting positive weather.
Good bean weather, too, right. Yes.
So what does the warmer weather mean? Are we going to see more fall weeds in the fields now that things are harvested? More bugs? I don't know about you guys, but in some of the corn grain fields and even some cover crop fields that were planted after wheat, seeing a lot of aphids.
Yeah, aphids come out. Yeah.
Yep, I agree.
So
the amount they make you itch because they're all like by the ear.
Yes.
The ear of the plant, and then they get... In your ears?
In your ears, on your neck, and yeah.
Short people problems, for you, it's, but yeah, for me, it's like, what is,
yeah,
like,
they have to crawl up to
like it. I almost feel like a, you know, a dog that has fleas where they're, like, scratching by their ears. Like, one day I got out of some corn, I'm like, what is going on? And, like, I grab my neck, like, oh, it's all the aphids. Like, aphids are just everywhere.
Yeah, so what effects are we going to see this fall? Because last fall we had super dry beans, we had corn... dry down super fast. A lot of corn was done by the end of October. You know, there was some still in November, but not as much as we usually see in a typical fall. So we've had, since wheat, pretty good cover crop growth, really, on all these later cover crops, or late season cover crops. Most of the interseedings I've seen have looked really good, but now that we're dry again, are we going to have enough moisture to plant cover crops even after silage that was pushed a little bit later? So yeah, what do we know? Well, we don't know much. We're not weathermen. We can't really predict what it's going to be, but we've got the Old Farmer's Almanac, which some people swear by, other people swear at. So I thought it'd be interesting to kind of look and see what that says about what we have left for the season. So kind of like we do the GDUs, what I did here, guys, was I pulled the forecast for here and the world headquarters in Seymour, Crivets up north, and Sun Prairie to the south, just to kind of get a perspective on what kind of weather we can expect. So the The first section here is here the world headquarters in Seymour. And so for where we are, it gave me a 2-month forecast and it started with September, even though September was almost over when I was looking this up. So for September, it said we were going to get rainy periods early and be cool, which we got the cool. I don't know that we really get a lot of rain early September, but then we had that period in the middle where we got rain. Drizzly, then rain with snow to the north, potentially, toward the end of September, which I don't think anybody got snow.
Canada had some.
Canada, but not...
When we were cold that week, I think Canada was getting snow. So what is north?
Yeah.
That's the kicker there.
Well, and if you look, I didn't copy that part, but if you look at the very bottom, they kind of give you a map of what it looks like. So yeah, north, I think they did mean up into like Canada. So that part was getting close. Then warm, September 28th to the 30th, like sunny turning warm. So we did have they kind of got the end of September right. But then for October, they're looking at rain and potential, again, northern snow, sunny, warm, and then chilly for the first part of October. Then rainy through the middle part. Sunny and warm toward the end of October again. And so the average temperature for October, they're saying, is going to be 2 degrees below average, which I think it's funny because they say sunny, warm.
Right, like, and say it's below
average. And then say below average. And then an inch below average precipitation. So we'll get some precipitation, but not more than we should expect. And then they have a weather graph trend for, you know, the end of October through next October. So that they give you like a whole year. And on here they've got bars for temperature and precipitation. They have a normal line, which I don't know how they know what normal is, but that's what they're calling it. And then it'll tell you where the temperature is supposed to be. So for November, it's showing average temperature with below average precipitation. December, lower temperatures with lower precipitation. January, February, March, all supposed to be warmer than average with below average precipitation in January.
That's bad for snowmobilers.
Slightly above in February and average in March. Then come April, they're saying it's going to be less.
That's normal.
More normal temperature, less normal precipitation. May is pretty normal. June, they're saying it's going to be dry, like significantly less precipitation. So the like a drier summer is
take a normal fun. May.
Yeah.
Well, drier May so we can get planted.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be bad. So that's kind of their view is that we'll cool down, but it'll kind of warm back up in winter in the early part of next year. For Seymour, when you look at the next one is Sun Prairie, that they're kind of calling for fairly similar outlook, except for January is expected to be below normal precipitation and temperatures for next year.
Summer, they're calling for more rain, though.
Yep, and they're supposed to, especially July, they're going to have a wet July, which seems unusual. And then when you look at Krivitz, they're kind of in a similar boat that we're in as far as like the long-term forecast. So I don't think the way the almanac looks at weather that they really distinguish between us and Krivitz a whole lot.
Sure.
Just the way it looks. So this is really from probably 21 north and 21 south seem to be kind of the dividing line they use. So to the south, if their predictions are right, they might see a little bit different weather than what we see up here. But either way, it looks like we're not going to see averages according to what they say. Now, you take this with a grain of salt because we know a lot of things can change in weather in a week, let alone 2 weeks, a month. But I just thought it was interesting to look and see what they say, and now we can follow this through the next couple of months and figure out if if they're on to something as far as the trends go, or if it's going to be something where we just throw it out. Because I think, wasn't it last year they said we're going to have an above average snowy winter, and we really didn't see that.
It was colder and open.
Colder, open early. Then we had
like a little snow in there, but
I remember a phone call in January from a grower that's like, "I think my hay is going to be all dead because there was no snow cover at all."
Ironically, places like Kentucky and south of us were getting more snow than they typically.
Yeah, right.
Like they were getting that.
But I think, Matt, one thing we should note, though, is I don't think, because it's dry and it potentially looks dry as we go, I don't think any of us are saying, like, stop your cover crop plans. Even winter wheat, like, if you remember last year, it was dry, and we were kind of surprised in some cases how good the winter wheat came.
Yeah.
In general, the winter wheat I've got planted, I mean, obviously the stuff before that rain looks great. I was in a field yesterday where I didn't realize they were even able to do this, but they got, like, the headlands planted before the rain, and then they got rained out, and the headlands looked awesome, and then the rest they got planted, like, 4 days ago, and it was germinated, but it'd just be interesting, that comparison, when you get it in that early ahead of a rain, usually that getting stuff in ahead of rains is usually good. So we'll see what that does.
Yeah, it's the beginning of October. I mean, we're not getting into the late season here where it's like, oh, we have to start making decisions on whether it's a good idea or not to plant wheat at this point, or cover crops. So yeah, looking for those opportunities, looking for moisture. You know, certain soils, it seems, have been holding moisture better than others. We've had heavy dews. I mean, we're hot during the day, but we're cool at night. I mean, earlier this week, we had fog, and it was a really weird fog. I don't know how much you saw Bill in Wrightstown or your...
Bill was just talking to me earlier this week.
I was driving to the headquarters talking to Todd.
Said it's always foggy at the World Headquarters.
Yeah, like it was fine at home. There was even one day, I think it was last week, where I was walking the dogs at dawn, and it was clear. And then I was getting our kids on the bus like around 7 when the bus comes, and all of a sudden within that time the fog rolled in and you couldn't see the neighbor's house.
Yeah.
But the one day I was talking to Todd, it was clear at home, and then I got here and I got within 5 miles of Seymour and I couldn't see ahead of me. It did change a lot that day.
Yeah, I had to drop my truck off for oil change. So Jody from Tilth came and picked me up. But as I was driving to the oil change place, like, it's north of town, I dropped the kids off, everything seemed fine. Then I started driving north of town, and all of a sudden I couldn't see the edge of town. And it was super foggy all the way to the oil change place and back. And then coming to the office here, the Tilth World headquarters, it's always the worst because our driveway is on a hill, and it's like halfway down the hill. And when it gets really foggy, you can't see the traffic coming over the hill, so you're kind of like Hail Marying it into the driveway here because you're like, hopefully nobody's coming, or they have their lights on.
Just gun it.
But what was really wild was later, I think that kind of held the dew longer because I was in a field probably like 11 o'clock that morning, and my shoes were soaking wet from how wet the...
Usually by 10,
you're
free of dew, clear of dew. But
yeah, it was like 10:30, 11, somewhere in there, and it was still fairly wet. So these dews, the moisture is hanging. If corn's still in the field, corn is really good at funneling that moisture down to itself. So, there's probably moisture there that we're not really thinking, because a lot of times we think of rain and, it hasn't rained, so it's got to be super dry in it. In some cases, that might be the case, but there is probably more moisture than we think available out there. So it's, like you said, Bill, not a panic mode, not like a, hey, let's not plant anything. Just kind of watch the weather. If you are concerned, I don't want to say, because I had a farmer tell me last year, or no, two 2 years ago when it was super, got super dry. It was like, well, it's got to rain sometime, right?
Nope.
And it's like, well, yeah, but no. So I don't want to say that, and I'm not saying that, but I think there is going to be opportunity to do what you need to do this fall yet. You just have to, it might take a little longer for things to emerge if we don't have as much moisture. So
it would be good, be great for harvest, and it's been,
yes, from a harvest standpoint,
been a good, fairly good window with corn silage. Like we said, so far the early window of beans has been good. Hopefully there'll be a good manure window, and then for corn grain, usually I would say that's one advantage, like with corn grain, like it's not as big a deal for conditions to be perfect for that harvest. It's later, and yeah, if it gets real late and the ground freezes, that's fine. Or if it's a little foggy or rainy, it's not like soybeans where it's a huge pain in the butt. So I guess as far as that goes, that outlook looks quite good.
Yeah, from a harvest standpoint, yeah. And from a cover crop standpoint, you know, if you can, depending how you're applying your manure and how you can use it, that could provide moisture for that cover crop. So plant your cover crop first, then do your manure. Might be a good option for this fall if you're thinking it might be a little bit drier. But yeah, we'll see. I'm not going to cross my fingers and hope that the almanac's right here or wrong. Just we got to watch the weather and make decisions accordingly. And yeah, who knows what even next week will look like. If all of a sudden we could hit a patch, one of those hurricanes shifts, and we get that kind of weather pushed up in here and we get a rainy couple weeks. And yeah, you just never know what fall is going to bring. So, all right, that's all I got. Now let's move into our spotlight for today. All right, so Nutrien has their Nutrien Hub. They've added weather financing and crop planning tools for your use. So what can this hub do? Well, you can submit credit applications and receive results. You can do online payments, get paperless statements, financing offers, weather insights, crop planning, all kind of available through that tool. Nutrien says developing more features, including expanding their financing enrollment that would give farmers additional flexibility. The goal is to provide tools that are useful every day, not only when inputs are purchased or applied, according to Rob Clayton, the Senior Vice President of North American Retail. By uniting our retail expertise with Nutrien Financial in one platform, we're making it easier for growers to focus on what matters most, running productive, profitable farms. So if you use Nutrien or you're curious about how the tool might work, you can go to the hub, which is available to U.S. farmers through their local Nutrien Ag Solutions Consultant or online at OneTool, Nutrien Ag Solutions. So info nutrien.nutrienagsolutions.com/OneTool is where you can find it and check it out if it sounds interesting to you. So it's just another tool in the toolbox.
Why did they have to start with credit applications?
Yeah.
Like, we already know prices aren't great and all this, and then they start with credit application, then online payments.
Yep.
How can you 24/7 and a pay and avoid late fees? Yeah, start with the weather insights maybe or something.
It's just the world we live in. It's current.
It's just frustrating. Yeah. It's the current situation out there. We want everybody to stay positive. We can hopefully your yields are doing well and things are as good as they can be.
Yeah, I mean, generally things seem positive on that side.
Yes.
So, all right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. All right, since we were talking about the Old Farmer's Almanac, thought it'd be good to talk about how it got off to its start. So under the guiding hand of its first editor, Robert B. Thomas, the premier issue of the Farmer's Almanac, as it was known then, was published in 1792 during George Washington's first term as president. Although many other almanacs were being produced at the same time, Thomas's Upstart became an immediate success. In fact, by its second year, circulation tripled from 3,000 to 9,000. Back then, the almanac cost only 6 pence, which is about 9 cents. Thomas's successor, John H. Jinks, was helped by the fact that Thomas had already calculated the astronomical material for several future editions. In 1848, Jinks officially added Old to the title of the almanac. The book had been previously known as the Farmer's Almanac, except in 1832 when Thomas inserted that word Old, but then dropped it 3 years later. So in 1851, Jinks added to the cover a drawing depicting the four seasons. In 1877, Robert Ware became the sixth editor of the almanac, delegated most of his tasks to focus on his true passion, publishing. Ware's brother Horace took the reins in 1900. During his 19 years as editor, he began to orient the book more towards the general audience by replacing scientific agricultural articles with general features on nature and modern life. The eighth and ninth editors, Frank Newton and Carol Swan, kept the almanac tradition alive even during times of war and depression. Roger Scaife was appointed in 1936. His term coincided with the only time in history that the almanac declined precipitously in circulation and financial stability. The 1938 edition had a circulation of only 88,000 compared with 225,000 in 1863. That might be why he tried to do something radical and drop weather forecasts. In their place, he substituted temperature and precipitation averages. Public outcry was so great that full forecasts were reinstated the following year. 1939, Rob Sagedorf became the editor. In 1942, a German spy was apprehended by the FBI with a copy of the Old Farmer's Almanac in his pocket. U.S. government feared that Germans were using the almanac's weather forecasts for their wartime strategies.
The Germans.
So a shift to weather indications rather than forecasts allowed the almanac to continue publishing throughout the war. It's a close call that almost ruined the almanac's perfect record of continuous publication. Over the decades, the almanac's reach and reputation had continued to grow. The Sagendorf's nephew, Judson Hale, took over in 1970. And was followed by the first female editor, Janice Stillman, in 2000. In 2023, the Old Farmer Almanac named Carol Connor its 14th editor, carrying on the legacy of the almanac with a mission to introduce to the new generation of farmers, gardeners, and nature enthusiasts the humor and wisdom of the almanac. So it's a pretty long run there for one publication, 1792 until now, still going. So.
That's super cool. 9 cents, which probably was a lot, actually. I mean, I know it said it reasonable, but...
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, still, yeah. At that time, it would have been...
I think they're about $7 or $8 right now, last one I bought.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I haven't looked at the hard copy, because it's available online now too, that you can get.
Purchase online, or do you just see it, or
they give you a limited, like, I think you can subscribe and get the full benefit, sure, of it, but you can see limited things on the website. Yeah.
All right, cool. Thank you, Matt, and thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. Search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts, or on your Android phone, download an app like Podcast Addict. And now we've got big, big news. Are you excited for this news?
Really big
news. We are excited.
Yeah, big news. Now we are available on Spotify.
Woo!
So we've heard from our listeners that Spotify must be a hugely popular platform, and I'm sure they've seen it already that we're there. But just so everybody knows, you could tell a farmer friend now on your Android phone, download Spotify. Or on your Apple phone if you like to listen using that app or program or whatever you want to call it, platform, we're available. So you can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcast, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
Thanks, Todd. Yes, welcome, Spotifyans. Spotifyans. I don't know what you call the Spotify group
Spotify
of listeners.
Nation.
But you are now welcome to the podcast.
Jake was showing us earlier that you do need to, you can't just rate right away. You actually have to listen to a few episodes before you rate us on there. So,
which you're going to anyway. You're going to listen to a couple. Right. So
sit, download, and
listen to a couple.
Let it ride.
And rate.
But yes, I was shocked at how many people listen on Spotify, which is cool. It's cool to be there and up and going.
All right. Well, now it's time for our Cool Beans That's Corny and some current events. So, Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. Corn harvest progress has reached 18% nationwide. Soybeans are just ahead of that at 19%. And winter wheat planting has reached 34% with emergence at 13%. So as of September 28th, 95% of the corn crop across the country's top 18 growing states has reached the dent stage. Progress is 1 percentage point shy of the five-year average. Across all states, 71% of the crop has reached maturity, putting progress 3 points behind the five-year average. But harvest is at 18% across 17 of 18 states. Five-year average is 19, so we're right there on average, while last year we were ahead slightly at 20%. Only North Dakota has no corn harvested at this point. Their state average is 5%, so not sure what's going on in the Dakotas, but a little bit slower to start there. And soybeans, 79% of soybeans across the top 18 growing states have reached the leaf dropping stage, which is ahead of the five-year average at 77%. And across those 18 states, 19% of the crop harvested by September 28th, which is 1 point shy of the average. So there again, right on the pretty close to the five-year average there. So it's good. It means things are going well so far. Like we said earlier, yields seem to be pretty good so far too. So hopefully that trend will continue into the fall. Our That's Corny this week. We've talked about it a number of times, and I'm sure people are sick of hearing about it, but China has signaled that purchase of U.S. soybeans will hinge on the removal of tariffs. So they have yet to buy any soybeans from the U.S. and have been buying more from South America. So the United States should remove what China describes as unreasonable tariffs and create conditions to expand bilateral trade, according to a Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesperson. When asked if China would purchase U.S. soybeans, China is normally the world's biggest buyer of soybeans, but has yet to book any U.S. soybean cargoes for this autumn harvest, opting for South American supply instead. U.S. farmers stand to miss out on billions of dollars of soybean sales because of unresolved trade tensions that have halted exports to China. There's still the potential that it could happen, but there's a lot of work to be done, hopefully that will result in some purchase of soybean cargoes yet this fall. And now we'll wrap things up with our Feel Good Friday. So there's new Wisconsin legislation aiming to support family farmers and feed the hungry. So a Wisconsin state senator has introduced legislation that would help family farmers, rural communities, and consumers. Brad Pfaff says his ag purchase program, Senate Bill 408, is a win-win proposal. Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection would work with food pantries and other nonprofit distribution facilities in order to make sure that they receive the money, $30 million, and those nonprofit food pantries would go out and purchase locally grown food as well as dairy products. Pfaff said if signed into law, the program would help keep Wisconsin family farmers afloat, as well as helping people who are facing food insecurity. Food pantries who need to apply directly to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture for the funds, and of course, they would have to purchase Wisconsin-grown and Wisconsin-processed food. So the bill also provides for an additional staff member at DATCAP to help administer the grant program. A companion bill, AB 386, has been introduced in the State Assembly, and both bills have been circulated for support at the Capitol. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes and if it makes it through the process. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked the weather we've been experiencing and what we can maybe expect looking ahead into the rest of the harvest season. In our spotlight, we talked about Nutrien Hub and their suite of tools available for farmers. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of the Old Farmer's Almanac, been around since 1792. Cool beans this week. Crops are moving along in the harvest window that we have, and it's been a pretty good harvest window so far for most. That's corny. China still not purchasing U.S. soybeans and hinting that tariff removal will be the requirement for them to do so. And our Field Good Friday is some legislation aimed at supporting farmers and also helping feed the hungry. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.